There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 1035, March 12, 2024. Nasser?
Thank you, sir. Max takes another victory. Red Bull gives you controversy. Mutiny on the Bounty. We shall explain gladly.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Behrman warned about Nyck de Vries syndrome. Max may eventually miss competition. Lance Stroll dreaming of Andre Agassi right before the crash. Fernando Tenths, simply just not quite enough. And Felipe Massa, ladies and gentlemen, it's official. He has filed suit in the UK today against Bernie, FOM, the FIA, and anybody else who stands in his way to retake the 2008 Formula One Drivers' World Championship. NAS, we've got so many things going on in the back. I don't know what to say. This Red Bull thing is really getting annoying. How are you?
I am doing very good, sir. And I have to say greetings and racing regards from jolly old England. I got here on Sunday. And how is life in the colonies?
The colonies, sir, just remind everybody, we did win. And therefore, we're the lucky ones stuck with back to you, Nass.
Okay, you know, today we have a fully loaded Bangers and Mash edition. But sir, first of all, a very big shout out and a very big thank you to members of F1 Weekly Familia, Louis and Didi in Didim, Netherlands. This place is near the German town of Emmerichen, which is the hometown of Nico Hülkenberg. So that was interesting. And what a wonderful, fantastical weekend we had. We will have a detailed report and conversation with Louis in next week's podcast, where he will give us a very nice historical tour of the Spa circuit, corner by corner, basically, important places like Master King, Malmedy, Stavlo. So that was very, very impressive. So I'm very thankful to him. We also made a trip to Zolder and to Tourlemont-Bach. This is the corner where Gilles Villeneuve very sadly lost his life in May 1982. And of course, like Ronnie Peterson, Gilles Villeneuve is one of those few drivers that everybody has very positive vibes and opinions, and even to this day, after all these years. So that's very nice. There is a nice statue in his honor, which I believe was placed or erected there in 2002. And then we also made a trip to the DAF Museum in Eindhoven, and which, if you may recall, once upon a time they used to make small cars, and now they're still making big trucks. So, and this was very interesting. And as I said, in the town of Eindhoven, very famous for a football team also. I have to say, Mr. Rogers, the trip to Spa brought back memories of the Grand Prix back in 2013, where we had our first international get-together of several F1 Weekly Familia members from around the world. Weather in Europe has been cold and chilly, but the love for Formula One is keeping us all warm. Again, we will have more in next week's tales from the trip, and I also have taken a lot of pictures both in England and in Netherlands and Belgium, and we will be posting on our website as time will permit. I'm doing a lot of traveling, so getting very tired. But, you know, it's all very exciting, and then looking forward to the big show in Land Down Under. And, sir, also many thanks to Dr. Mark and Mr. Brazier for our meetup. A trip to an Indian restaurant is our SOP, and Peter can chow down some serious peppers. I'm very impressed. Monday, we made a trip to what was Detroit of UK and an important town in the annals of motor racing history, Coventry. The motor museum there is very impressive and worth visiting, and so is the nearby National Motorcycle Museum. The number of motorcycles in this collection is absolutely amazing. They have five big halls full of bikes from Ariel and BSA to Norton and Triumph. Sir, I'm sure you remember growing up as a kid listening to the wonderful sound of Triumph engines.
Of course, sir, but being in Europe, I also loved the Bull Taco.
Oh, yes, they all had very large sound. And as I was telling Dr. Mark, you know, when I was a kid and anybody came to the neighborhood on his Triumph sounding like a big racing machine, I was very young, but my brother and I, we would run to the window and, you know, see who it is. Good old days, sir. Now, speaking of the Red Bull saga, Days of Our Lives soap opera continues in Formula One. As if the Christian Horney saga was not enough fodder for media frenzy and Jos the boss mentally, here comes the anonymous rain again, falling on Dr. Helmut Marko and Mohammed bin Sulayem's heads like a new emotion. And why is it, to no one's surprise, that Machismo, a.k.a. Alonso, is once again caught in the crossfire? Amazing. Now, Dr. Marko is being investigated for media leaks related to the Horner case. And Inside Tipster alerted the BBC that FIA president, this was very interesting, Mohammed bin Sulayem, picked up the phone after last year's Saudi Arabian Grand Prix and requested his lieutenant to rescind the five-second penalty so your hombre, your Dios, can claim back his 100th podium. During the race, Machismo had come in to serve a five-second penalty for starting from the wrong position on the grid, and he was given another five-second penalty when the jack was attached to the car before the original five-second penalty was served. Going technical on Machismo, but, you know, rules are rules. The president of FIA is also accused of trying to cancel the permit of the Vegas Grand Prix. I don't know if this is true or not, but if it is, then he has huge kahunas, if you know what I mean. And I would really like to get this thing resolved, and so the focus is back on motor racing. Now, last week, information surfaced that this, again, is, I don't know if it's true, that Christian Horner was trying to buy out the Red Bull team with British investors and Thai owners of Red Bull, the 51% share owners, without the express written or verbal consent of the people who had made the racing team and the drinks company, as Lewis calls them, sailing so successfully, all this from a landlocked country called Austria. This cannot go on all season long. Sooner or later, there will be some serious casualties and collateral damage. Question of the day brought to you in part by Alka-Seltzer. Mr. Rogers, when will this blah, blah, fizz, fizz go away from Formula One so we may have a Grand Prix without any off-track headaches and side effects?
Well, Fernando said it best. It must be a really dull season when you have so much caca rolling around in the back. It's very bizarre. The Sulayem thing, so he's a Fernando fan. There's a lot of us out there, Nasser. What can you do? He had a little power and went to his head. I thought that was hilarious. I don't know about the Vegas thing. That seems pretty scary and odd. What a season. Well, that's what's going to happen. We're going to forget about Max. It's become a soap opera about Red Bull. And of course, Toto, he's sitting back, wringing his hands and thinking of what kind of potion he could come up with to bring Max over. And Jos Verstappen, he originally contacted Toto when Max was still a wee whippersnapper. So this is all wonderful. It's classic Formula One, ladies and gentlemen. I can't wait to see what Netflix does with this. But it is definitely bizarro land. Christian Horner seemed like too smart of a guy to get involved in something like this. There had to be something strange going on further deep down in the frontal lobe. So, no, very bizarre. But I also love it. And of course, now we have Massa with the, I think it's 80 million pounds sterling that he's looking to get. So, wow, what a season it's going to be. Yeah, Max is just going to be on the, you know, on the afterburner, winning everything. The big thing is the Honda reliable enough to have the immaculate season?
First, you know, Horner was acquitted through the efforts of the outside barrister, lawyer. Now I read a report not about an hour or so ago that Christian Horner will be dismissed from Red Bull before the Australian Grand Prix. So who knows what the... We'll just have to keep on watching one episode after another and see where the chips fall.
Exactly. Brought to you by Hanna-Barbera.
There you go. That's all, folks. Okay, so now we will move on to Colli. Out in Q1, the usual suspects. Both Alpines and Saubers. Surprise, surprise. Plus Logan Sargeant, your favorite driver. He is really missing the beat in his second season of Formula One. Early days still in the new season, but I do not see him troubling teammate Alexander Albon anytime soon. What say you, amigo? Do you think he will pick up the pace or become another Chalupa from across the pond?
It's Chalupa season, I'm telling you. Listen, I'm gifted. I can tell when somebody doesn't have it. Listen, I'm sure he's a swell guy. And Vols giving him a second chance, it's awesome. The only thing so far, he's not crashing as much. So that's going to save him a little bit of money. But the reason why he's not crashing, because he's not driving on the limit. He's scared to. He's not F1 material. We need to move along. There's a lot of talented people that are coming up the grapevine.
Okay. Oliver Bearman was star of Q2. Despite just missing out on moving to Q3, he was riding high on a prancing horse in his last-minute Formula One debut. He almost pushed a 7-time world champion out of Q3. Who could that be, Mr. Rogers?
That was nice to see. LCH is struggling. Unfortunately, the Mercedes is pretty much the W14 2.0. It happens, and I don't know. But Toto is frustrated, but now he thinks he's going to get Max, so he's a little happier now.
Well, let's hope that happens. Now, Q3, business as usual. Leclerc was quick and close, but no cigars nor pole position. So Max took his second pole position of the season. Pretty soon we'll be saying third, fourth, fifth, and on and on. Row 2 was Habla Español, Checo and Nando. Row 3 was all McLaren, row 4 all Mercedes. Row 5 featured the hardest working youths in the business of Formula One today and tomorrow. Yuki Tsunoda and Daddy's little Jim Clark. Your thoughts on Colli, Senor?
I was really impressed with Ollie almost getting out of Q2. That was impressive, especially for an 18-year-old who really was quite surprised to get this this wonderful opportunity. So, no, great. I was disappointed with the Aston Martin. I want to see Fernando on pole. It's shown pace, but they're just not getting it together. I know, but still, there's a dream out there, Nasser, and I'm grabbing it.
Now the race. T for two. 2 for 2 for Max, only 22 more coming. Every race this season, I think, will be like Selsun Blue Shampoo, rinse and repeat. The only question now on my mind is, can one driver win each and every race of the season? The 2024 season is not like the inaugural Formula One season when there were only 7 races. Now we have 24 Formula One Grand Prix races in one season. Can Max win 24 races this season? I say he has the talent, he has the package. Let's see what fate in F1 brings for him and for all the viewing public around the world. What do you think, sir? Will Red Bull, if not Max, have an immaculate season and win all the races?
It's very possible, and the reason was right in front of us, and that was the Lewis Hamilton and Piastri fight, or I don't want to call it a fight, but the passing that was just didn't happen because McLaren's DRS was not Red Bull's DRS. I heard they've already hired a wing expert, but it's interesting, but we saw it right there, and that's the reason. Red Bull has their DRS functioning at 110%, and that's where people are trying to get to, and it's going to be tough. But yeah, there you go. That was it. And I think Aston Martin is in a similar position. So once again, the Red Bull is like 2 years ahead of the future.
Okay, sir. Victory for Max is win number 56 and a century of podiums in Formula One from 187 starts. And sir, I have to go into the DNF chapel and make a confession. For over a year, I've been saying Max will have 70-plus wins by the end of the 2025 season, when I expect him to celebrate his fifth championship in a row. It is pretty obvious win number 70 will not be happening in 2025, but we will see this incredible achievement before this season is over. The numbers he's piling on are staggering and scary, but this is what happens when you put the best driver of the moment in the best machine. Results will be razor sharp, the best a man can get. We have seen this movie before. Sir, what do you think about Max equaling Schumi's number by the end of next season?
Unbelievable. I mean, especially when you start looking at the numbers that Jackie Stewart put up, Jimmy Clark. I mean, we're going into the stratosphere. And it started with Lewis Hamilton in 2014. Yeah, he's going to stack them on. It's very, very, it's sort of cool to be witnessing this. And every time this happens, we always say these records can't be broken. And boom, some young whippersnapper comes along and starts breaking them again. So you never know what's around the corner. But I'm sort of happy to be around to watch this.
Yeah, same here. We've seen incredible talent through the ages. Star of the show was lad from London, or Chelmsford to be precise. The future of English racing is very bright. Here in the Palatial Studios, we have been singing in the praises of a few drivers like Kimi Antonelli and Star of Saturday for a few seasons already. Before the race, we all knew who will win the race. I only had one wish, that the debutant does not crash in the race. I am very happy and very excited to see a new, young, fresh face in Formula One. Behrman becomes youngest Ferrari rookie and displacing Lando as the youngest British driver. He is now the 776th driver to start a Formula One race. Moving on, Lando Norris. Did he or did he not? Back in the early 80s, there was a French driver by the name of Jean-Pierre Jarier, and his nickname was Jumper. In the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, Lando Norris was the jumper to the naked eyes, but not to the transponder. So much for technology. In their decision, the stewards clarified that Norris had not committed an infringement under the wording of the regulations, as the FIA standardized data transponder did not indicate he had jumped the start. They noted that the regulations state clearly that the judgment of whether or not there was a jump start is to be made in accordance with the transponder, which did not show a jump start. And this is the reason you should have highly qualified lawyers who can cover any and every eventuality or situation. Now, Norris was also involved in another Yuki incident. As he was going out on his reconnaissance lap, Tsunoda Sain jumped in front of him. Yuki has his own mind and agenda. He did so despite an RB team member signaling him not to do so. The only question I have is, why am I not surprised? And this is not the last time. Once upon a time, Ron Dennis described Eddie Jordan as the village idiot of the Formula One paddock. I think it's about time we bestow the same honor on Yuki Tsunoda. Roger Sain, do you concur with me, or would you rather serve some Sapporo sake to Yuki?
I'll serve a little sake to Yuki. Hey, listen, I thought he drove better than Ricky Ricciardo. He's got some weird style, and I don't want to get into it, really. But he's part of Honda, and we better just say, you know, he could be at Aston Martin next year. So don't laugh. This guy's going to be around for a while.
You know, like the song Moon River, wherever you're going, I'm going your way.
Moon River, wider than a mile, I'm crossing you in style someday. Dreammaker, you heartbreaker, Wherever you're going, I'm going your way.
That's the case with Yuki and Honda Engine. So he will be at Aston Martin, or if they are supplying some other team, he may go there. But as far as Daniel Ricciardo is concerned, I think he's a write-off at this stage now. What do you think?
Yeah, I think he already knows that he has no chance to get to Red Bull. He realizes he's become a mediocre driver. It happens to everybody.
Oh, yes, changing of the guard. Okay, sir, moving down the result, Perez was second, only 13 seconds behind his teammate. Pretty respectable for anyone going against Max in the same car. It was a Red Bull 1-2 in season opener also. Just like Bahrain, third man on the podium was a Ferrari driver. This time it was Charles Leclerc. Carlito had a little problem in his tummy, which turned out to be appendicitis. I was very surprised by Ferrari's choice to replace Sainz Jr. with 18-year-old Oliver Bearman. I thought they would put Robert Schwartzman. He is part of their reserve drivers. He is from St. Petersburg, one with the Hermitage Museum, not the Salvador Dali Museum in Florida. Schwartzman now races under Israeli flag. Perhaps, and I'm not starting any conspiracy theory here, it was deemed not kosher to put him in the Grand Prix in Saudi Arabia with all that's going on in this world right now. They could have also put their Grand Prix experienced and Le Mans winner Antonio Giovinazzi, driving artist previously known as Italian Jesus. I understand he has cut his hair now, but it was Ollie who got to shine in race and quali. And, you know, Mr. Rogers, what is impressive is Nick DeFries, you alluded to him earlier in the podcast, he was given an opportunity and he ran with it at Monza in a Williams, and I was very happy for him, but then he went flat in full season. So I don't think this is going to happen with him, and this is the reason I say this. I'm a firm believer when a kid comes into single-seater racing and hits the ground running, that kid is very, very talented. Ollie, I've been watching his career for a few years. You know, he does not have a 7-year junior career right now, and he has been very, very impressive. He was very impressive in Formula 2 last year, won races. He was very impressive in F3. Our man, Nick DeFries, took 3 years to win a very basic series called Formula Renault 2.0. So time will tell how Ollie will move forward. Okay, now we come to Charles Leclerc. I am sure he is anxiously waiting to see how quick his new teammate will be in 2025. And there is a school of thought that he will blow away Lewis Hamilton. Not so fast, I say. I'm not saying Lewis Hamilton will blow away Charles Leclerc, but let both these youths have an opportunity in the community to go against each other and see what happens.
May I comment on that a little bit?
S'il vous plaît, monsieur.
It reminds me of that one of your favorite years, of course, and I'm talking about wine only, is 2007. But here comes an outsider where an insider's been there for a while and knows the ropes and the sneaky stuff, see? Fernando to McLaren in 07 comes in and LCH fully assimilated in McLaren. So I like the comparisons. It's going to be interesting if Leclerc can push Lewis as he gets acclimated to the new marinara sauce. So it's going to be very interesting.
Well, I'm very impressed. This is the first time since 2008, January 1st, that you have a total recall of the 2007 season.
Yes, this was brought about by hypnosis.
Very good, very good. But, you know, we will see that Charles Leclerc is, you know, they say that he's very quick on one lap. But I think if his red car was as quick as Red Bull, he will be winning races and fighting for the championship. His junior career is as impressive as Lewis Hamilton's, so it will be a very good fight. And of course, may the best man win. Leclerc did set the fastest lap of the race, so at least he got something extra from the race. Fourth was Aussie mate from Melbourne, Oscar Piastri, and of course, next round he will be on home soil. Completing the top five, this is where it gets interesting, was His Majesty Sir Karma Alot Fernando Alonso for Aston Martin. Now, 6th to 9th were English lads, led by George Russell, very talented. Oliver Bearman, he showed what he can do. Lando Norris, very talented. And Sir used to win a lot, Lewis Hamilton. Now, let me ask you a question going back to Leclerc and Lewis. Are you one of those Hammy haters who are already convinced that Leclerc will blow him away?
No, no. Oh, no, 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 no. Au contraire, monsieur. No, I believe finally they will feed off each other because Leclerc is very quick. Lewis is very quick. Lewis will adapt to the Italian lifestyle very, very quickly. And no, I think we're going to get some competition, some cage rattling, but it's going to be clean, competitive, especially since Lewis is an older, mature guy who's seen it all, obviously. So it's going to be fantastic because I think they're going to be best of friends and there's going to be competition.
Yeah, they will be best of friends till they are fighting for a win and take each other out. And then it's going to be like Austria with Nico and Lewis. But we are only one season away from watching this drama play out. Okay, sir, final point from 10th place was the first point of the season for Nico Hülkenberg and his team Haas F1. So that is good for them. When all is said and done, pigs have flown away, holy cows have come home. There will be changes, cage rattling, inter-team rivalry, and much, much more. But I suspect all of this will be happening behind one man and one team. At Mercedes, Hamilton is not happy. George Russell is waiting for the same thing as Fisico and his manager, a winning car. And Ferrari, I think they will need another Singapore virus for Red Bull to get a win this season. At this time, not sure if Sainz Jr. will be back in action in Australia. According to Monsieur Frederick Vasseur, he will let Sainz Jr. make the decision. But I do expect some fireworks between him and his soon-to-be ex-teammate. I am sure Carlito would like to leave on a high end and stick it to Charles any opportunity he gets. McLaren, two very talented young drivers in the lineup, but they cannot dress up as winners with the package they have. Alpine, less said the better. If they cannot beat Ferrari, Porsche and Toyota in World Endurance Championship, there is no way on earth, or in Viry-Châtillon, or in Enstone, that they will beat Ferrari, Mercedes, and Red Bull in the Formula One World Championship. I say, Signor Luca Di Meo, please pick up the white courtesy phone and call Michael Andretti. To help you and Alpine and Renault Group, he has a toll-free number, 1-800-SELL-TEAM, and you can even speak to his Papito in Paisan language. Your final thoughts on the Formula One race, sir, before we take a break?
It was a good race, fully dominated by Max. What was your reaction to Kevin Magnussen's tactics in holding up the back while Nico Hülkenberg put in some laps so he can get a free pit stop and stay in the points? A lot of people didn't like it. I thought it was clever. I thought it was awesome. I thought the race was great because it was a Formula One race. We love it.
Well, you know, he's a ballsy guy, and he has built his reputation on very strong defensive driving. But the thing is, you know, looks like he's not faster than, let's put it this way, if Rob Smedley was working at Haas F1, he would be saying, Kevin, Nico Hülkenberg is faster than you, if you know what I mean.
I do completely agree with that. And if anybody wants to read the book on defensive driving, just call Fernando El Machismo. So on that note, Nasser, why don't we take a quick break, and we'll be back after these brief messages.
Hello, I'm Nikia Johnson, and I'm going to be listening to F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, with the king, the Sultan himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir, and Mr. Rogers. We will make another pit stop in Berlin, Deutschland über alles, for part two of our conversation with Mr. Paul Velasco of Grand Prix 247. So let's play this conversation, interesting information from him, interesting stories, and then we will talk about other military racing events throughout the weekend. What about his team owner, Mr. Ron Dennis? Was he keen on having photos taken?
Can I be honest with you? I don't remember seeing Ron around a lot. Eh? Honestly, I think he spent a lot of time in the motorhome, and the motorhome had two levels of entry, and I was only afforded the sort of the first entry. But honestly, I don't recall. I have photos of Ron and Ayrton together, but I didn't see him as a gargantuan presence in the team at the time. You knew it was Ron's team, and you didn't have to see him to know it. You know what I mean? But yeah, I have pictures of Ron and Ayrton together for sure. And Ayrton often lecturing him when he's like giving him the finger. Not in a bad way, just like pointing to him. So he's obviously telling him something. So yeah, I mean, you know, you saw Ron. I mean, it was like, yeah, you're in the middle of the team. So sometimes I sit for lunch and next to you sits Berger, or next to you sits someone, you know, a visitor. Once I was sitting there, the McLaren thing, and in front of me, I sat down, and in front of me there's James Hunt and Niki Lauda sitting there together having a munch. You know what I mean? So it's those kind of things you get that you can only get when you actually live the life in there, you know.
I saw an interesting video on YouTube recently. Ron is standing in front of his, you know, pit area, and on the other side there's a cameraman just like focusing on video camera on Ron. And after a minute or two, Ron walks up to him and says to him, "Surely you must have something better to do with that camera."
Yeah, no.
Okay.
I don't think I ever said it. We even exchanged. I bet you Ron didn't even know I was in the garage.
Now, Silverstone 1991, you got thumbs up from your man Senna and thumbs down from Bernie. Which carried more weight?
Well, I don't know what carried more weight. It was just a very bad, unfortunate incident that involved violence, and violence is not the answer. You want me to tell the story?
If you don't mind.
Please. No, I don't mind telling the story. I mean, you know, I'd like to actually meet Pasquale one day and shake his hand, because this is basically what happened. I was, while I was shooting for Marlboro, I approached AP and I said, "Look, I'm going to all the racetracks. Can I cover this for you?" And I knew the guy running the desk there was a guy called Horst Voss. Horst Voss said to me, "Look, seeing you doing the bikes and the cars," because I was doing bikes also at the time, MotoGP, Wayne Rainey, Lawson, all those guys. "If you're doing both, well, why don't you do it for me and you send us some of the pictures." We used Leafax at the time. We used to process the film at the track and then transmit it via like a computerized thing that wasn't really a computer. But anyway, to cut a long story short, you needed a dark room for processing film, and you needed lots of space. So we arrived on the Wednesday in a motorhome, and I say we, it was Dave Corkin, a veteran Fleet Street photographer. He was much older than me. I was in my, when was it, 80? What are we talking
91.
About? No, 91. So I was 31. I was 30, 31. So Dave was probably in his 50s. So we arrived really early. We were in the motorhome. We're like the very first guys there. There's nobody else there. But we did that because we knew. So then we arrived. They wouldn't let us with the van beyond a certain point. Now, you're talking 200 meters to the gate and the entrance to the media center. So we say to the guard, "Listen, mate, it's not so busy. Can we just park the van there for 2 minutes? 2 minutes, literally, and we're going to unpack all the darkroom stuff and the equipment, and we're going to run back." English guy said, "Yeah, no worries, man." And off we did. And while we're doing this, some guy comes up, hysterical guy comes up on, I don't know, you could sense the anger coming up on us on a scooter. And he says, "Who are you? What are you doing here? What's this going on here? You can't be here." Well, I said, "Like, really?" I said, "Hey, chill, dude." We asked him, and the guy waved, and he said, "We can just unload here." "No, take your stuff, go. You're not allowed to be here." And I got like, I said, "No, mate, I'm not going." Then he said, "Who are you?" And he pulled my credential like that. And then I thought, "Fuck you, who the fuck are you?" And I just like pulled his credential. And I had his credential in my hand, and I started walking around the van. And as I walked out of in the van, I walked up the steps, and he came chasing me. And then as he was chasing me, Dave Corkin walked down the stairs past me and said, "Hey, young man, calm down, you're being very rude." And Pasquale kicked at him. And when he kicked at him, I came down the stairs and I punched him in the nose, which was bad. To cut a long story short, what transpired was my credential was taken, because I was summoned to Bernie's caravan, the FIA caravan at Silverstone. Basically, he said to me, "Can't have violence in my pit, in my event. can't go around beating people. Give me your credential. You can't get it back. Leave now. Jeez. Okay, I've never felt so small in my life. I mean, Bernie looked like a giant to me. Honestly, it was like it was a giant telling me how bad I was. Anyway, it was not good for my... It wasn't good for me, my psyche. It wasn't good for reputation. It's something I regret. Although, having said that, I did shoot a good picture that day. I got the picture that... Although I was told to go, I didn't go. And anyone who knows what it's like to cover a Grand Prix without a credential, I did. And because all the my colleagues were at the paddock, well, most of them, especially the competitors, AP, Reuters, AFP, we competed. They were all there, and I was one of the few agency guys out on track when Senna picked up, when Mansell picked up Senna and gave him the lift. And yeah, my picture ran the front page of just about every tabloid the next day of Mansell.
Giving right to Senna.
That picture got the front page of the tabloids the whole of the next day, really. It was something out of this world. And I had a lot of them had my credit on it. And yeah, so basically, I shot the picture without being allowed to be there. Again, winding fast forward, AP took issue with what happened. Were prepared to back me in a court of law at FIA, which the thing was going to go to. And then Bernie just one day, I get a call from him. And I don't know how he got my number, but he had my number. He said, hey, listen, cool, you can get your credential back, but just come and apologize to Pasquale. So, yeah, I made a print of that picture that I took that day, and he wasn't there. I just gave him. In fact, Bernie said, take Pasquale for a beer, but I couldn't be asked. I just put the picture in an envelope, and I gave it to him at his office. He wasn't there. And that was it, and I think I was dropped for a couple of Grand Prix just to whatever. Then I was back in Estoril again when Mansell lost his wheel, and I got that picture too. So yeah, end of the day, it was just not a good time, and it wasn't a good thing to do. But also, that guy wouldn't have got away with what he got away with, because I'll tell you why. From that day on to this day, I still get people who congratulate me for not beating up, one punching Pasquale, including Ayrton, who took me aside and said, I heard you go, and he started laughing. He didn't say anything, he just started laughing. And I made a very good friend that weekend, Agnes Collier. She's a legend. She's a legend of the Formula One paddock. And Agnes sympathized with my case so much, she came, she sought me out in the media center, in the photographer's hall that was at Silverstone at the time, and she gave me this amazing Marlboro jacket. And we've been friends ever since.
Yes, very interesting. Now, you have been running this website, which, like I've mentioned, I was going to long before we connected, GrandPrix247.com. And before that, you were involved in the Middle Eastern website, Yala F1. And believe it or not, I used to go to that website back in the day. Tell us about your new project, GrandPrix247. How long have you been doing this?
No, it's not that new. Let me tell you what happened. As a hobby, I started, and this website, Yala F1, because I thought at the time, it was like 2006, 2007, I thought that the Arab world will waken up to Formula One, which they did, but I couldn't get the Arabic version of the website going. So I changed the name in, I think, 2014 to Grand Prix 247. So it's been Grand Prix 247 ever since.
Safe to assume most of your readers are in English-speaking countries?
Yes.
Can you tell us for the demographics?
Let's give you the demographics. I don't want to lie to you, so I'd rather just...
No, please lie to me. No one has ever lied to me.
I'm just giving you a whole lot of lies. Now let me give you some truth. The demographics are, our majority of people is United States, about 18%. Then it's United Kingdom, 12%. Then you've got Australia, Canada, India, Netherlands, South Africa, etc., etc.
Very good. And, you know, Formula One has become very popular in the U.S. thanks to any and all access given to Netflix by Liberty Media. Couple of questions. Have you seen an uptake in web traffic to your site from the U.S. following the Drive to Survive series? And what do you make of that series, your opinion?
Look, my opinion is double-sided, okay? I think it's the most impressive boost in the image of Formula One. Look, the Netflix Drive to Survive series is two-pronged for me. The first one has been incredible, what it's done to galvanize interest and get people hooked on the sport. It was a perfect storm that in 2021, when this whole thing blew up, in terms of Netflix and that, we had this incredible season. with Lewis and Verstappen. And I think everyone thought that that was Formula One was about. But that was an anomaly of a season. Formula One's about dominance and it's about boring stuff most of the time. But that season, I think, grabbed so many people. And like I said, the perfect storm of Netflix and everything created this immense boom. Did I see... No, we didn't. We didn't see any increase, pretty much the same. Because you've got to understand what happens with a boom like that. People will go to the official websites, the mainstream, you know, websites, which is fine. I've got no problem with it. But we're not a mainstream. We're a niche site. So most people who come to us won't probably understand some of our stances on things. And they get very angry. And a lot of them are like trolls and racists, which we basically went through a very, very intense time of getting rid of these people. So, yeah. I haven't seen a boom. There hasn't been a big boom in income. I know that the teams are making a lot of money. But the thing that happens with Formula One tends to be is it itself hoovers all the money that's available around it. So there's not a media house that can say, oh, we're doing fantastic. They might have extra traffic, but the money is not flowing to us or to the media. It's flowing to the teams. And as a result, also when a sport booms in this way, suddenly you have 1,000 websites erupting, you have 1,000 podcasts, you have 1,000 YouTube channels all related to Formula One, and that sort of neutralizes the boom. But what we do notice is solid growth, is constant growth, and it's probably pegged at about a 5-10% growth a year, which is the best we can do. You know, if someone wants to invest in the site and get someone to market it, I don't even know that that would even boost sales, you know. So as it is at the moment, no, I can't say that it's trickled down to us, but that it's been good for the image and exposure of the sport, yes. If in the long term it's a good thing, we'll see.
Okay, you have spent a season of racing in the US. Tell us, what was the series, your connection with it?
Okay, that's quite way back in the 80s. I befriended a friend, we became friends, Robbie Peterson of the very famous South African Peterson family. They're a dynasty of racers. It began with Keith Peterson, who was the elder statesman. There was Dave Peterson, who rode MotoGP at a time when South Africans weren't really welcome in the world sporting arenas. Robbie himself. I also knew Gary Peterson very well, probably before them all, because he used to do motocross and I used to photograph motocross. So yeah, quite a legendary family. I just happened to be at the spot where Keith died and took photos of it at Kyle Army. From there, a friendship with Robbie evolved, and he was a South African motorcycle racer and champion. And yeah, we just got involved. We got involved in promoting the series in South Africa, and we got an opportunity to go and race at the AMA Superbike Series. And at the time, they had a very strong 250cc championship with Cork Ballington and riders like that. At the time, I don't remember all the names. I think John Kaczynski. No, I don't want to lie, but yeah, it was in that era. And we were based in Newport Beach. I think we stayed, and in that area we had a garage nearby. And from there we traveled the whole of America, towing the bikes to Loudoun, New Hampshire, which is really far, through Vague, through Nevada. And then we went to Elkhart Lake, Laguna, all the big tracks where AMA ran. And that was a fantastic year of learning. And in retrospect, maybe if I'd stayed there, it would have been a different journey for me. But honestly, at the time, the American bike series was, motorcycle racing was at a very, very high. You know, Doug Poland, Bubba Chobot were the stars. So yeah, it was a very interesting year.
You mentioned Road America, Wisconsin. It's my favorite track in the U.S. What was your impression of
that? I loved it. I actually think it's if I was a billionaire, I would take that track and turn it into a Formula One track, because it's got everything. It's got location. It's got, yeah, it's just, I love that track. I walked it. I actually walked that whole track inside and out. I was photographing at the time. I've got photographs of it. And yeah, I actually drive it on a sim. So it's cool. I think probably like Watkins, if it was really developed, it could become a beautiful track.
You know, in the F1 Weekly Constitution, we have a standard question, sort of pledge of allegiance. We ask people who come to the U.S. When you are there, we have a lot of choices there. What is your choice? Hot dogs or cheeseburgers?
Hot dogs.
Very good.
Why good? Is that a test?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's
now, I tell you what, cheeseburgers you get it, but those hot dogs with the chili and the onion and stuff, oh, man.
I asked one driver the same question, and he said, actually, I prefer pasta. Okay, game on for the 2024 season.
Yeah.
Any chance, it's a silly question, but I have to ask, any chance of regime change this season?
I doubt it. I'm doubting it. And we just watched the FP1 together, but you spoke so much I didn't even see it, of the Bahrain Grand Prix. No, I just can't see Max being beaten. I'm thinking a season like we've never seen before, but I hope I'm wrong. I hope Ferrari have a weapon, and Mercedes for that matter. We need three teams battling, not one guy running away.
They may have a cruise missile next year.
Yeah, mate, forget about it. You know what? Problem is this. Is you can give every driver the same car, but Max will have two tenths up on anyone else at the moment. At the moment, I don't think there's a better driver on the grid than Max. So throw Fernando, Lewis, yes, but I'm still going to say they are there. And if we've got to give them, but if you gave everyone equal cars, I think Max has the edge. Two to three tenths, I'd say.
Unfortunately, we have to agree with you. That's just the reality.
But that's the reality. You know, Michael, I don't think he ever had two, three tenths on anyone. He had maybe a tenth, but then he had the mind games that were so much more intense. Senna, I think, had Max. In fact, of all the drivers, you know, I watched Donington again. Donington with Senna, man. There's a video out there, a record he can't ever break, which is he set the fastest lap of the race that included a pit stop. Because in those days, there were no pit speed limits. So you see this footage of him coming around the corner, and his fastest lap on that day was through the pits. So that record's never going to be broken. And I watched that again, and I was like, wow, this is why I watch the sport.
In your expert opinion, who will replace Lewis Hamilton at Mercedes in 2025?
I have no idea, mate. I had no idea Lewis was going to go to Ferrari. I don't think anyone knew. And I see it this way. I don't think Mercedes have to make a fast decision. They've got to see how George performs this year. And George has got to own Lewis. Not in the way Charles owned Seb, because he destroyed Seb. But he's got to be faster than Lewis. He's just got to take control and convince Mercedes that he is the guy for the future and they can bring in an Antonelli. You know, then it gives Antonelli, say, if I was George, I'd say, guys, let's focus on me. I've done my time with Lewis. It was awkward, but it's cool. I was a gentleman. He's going. Now it's my turn. Give him 2 to 3 years with a rookie in the car, build Antonelli, and you've got a gig. And that's the ideal picture for George, because Antonelli's not going to bring pressure on him immediately, because he'll, you know, I don't believe. So that would be, but if Lewis is, and him are like they were last year, or you know, he's got to beat Lewis, then if I was Toto, I would say, well, maybe I bring Sainz in, but then maybe I bring Fernando in. You know, so I think it's up to George, not up to anyone else.
Absolutely. You know, the theory, the problem with that theory is, at the end of 2006, somebody was saying the same thing to Ron Dennis. Give me a chance, bring in a rookie. And we all know what happened.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, we have another standard question, final question of the day.
Yeah.
In all the times you've been in motor racing or following motor racing, if you were a team owner and you had to pick two drivers, who would they be?
Like I'm a billionaire. I'm like Dieter Matrix.
Yeah, you're like the South African Stroll.
Okay. I buy two teams.
Yeah, you can buy two teams. Yeah.
I buy two teams. And the one team I put Max, and the other team I put Ayrton. I put Ayrton and Gilles. No. I put Max and Gilles, Ayrton and Lewis.
Very good. I love that choice. And finally, how about a message to listeners of F1 Weekly? And like your website, we have listeners.
All guys, first of all, like I said, I'm late into this F1 Weekly thing. I've met Nasser, and I've never met a person with more knowledge about motorsport, particularly Formula One, but motorsport in general. And just one of the best interviews you can have is with this guy. It's like you're talking to a mate. So all I can say to you is just keep on trucking. We need a lot more of these interviews. We need to go dig into your old ones. And I'm really just very, very happy and pleased and thankful that you've thought that my story is interesting enough to host. But really, I'd like to interview you for a week.
Well, thank you so much. And as we always say, check is in the mail.
There's
lots of zeros on it.
Hello, my daughter's just walked in.
Okay,
you can ask her. I do not blow smoke up people's asses.
Paul, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Back to you, Nasser.
Yes, sir. Round two of Formula 2, also a support race to the Saudi Grand Prix. Winners in the sprint race, Dennis Hauger from Norway. He took the win after winner on the track, Dutch driver Richard Verschuur, was disqualified on a technical infringement. Paul Aron from Estonia was second, and Enzo Fittipaldi, based out of North Carolina, was third. Feature race, impressive and emotional win for Enzo. Enzo Fittipaldi, that is, grandson of Emo. Indian driver Kush Maini was second. Boy from Barbados, Zane Maloney, still leads the championship, and next round will be in Albert Park. And our mate on the spot in Australia, the original JB, tells me that you can approach the F2 paddock and F3 paddock on the grassy knoll. So I'm hoping that I can get some interviews done. There was no Formula 3 action past weekend. Now we come back to the US of A.
Back in the US, back in the US.
The right coast. IndyCar season opener in St. Petersburg, FLA. And sir, this is the first time since I moved to Florida that because I'm not in the country, I was not able to attend this event, which is a very good event, and the city is also very nice. However, there is trouble brewing in this series, as Roger Penske wants the team to pay $1 million annual membership fee to be in the charter system, like, you know, we have in Formula One right now. They will pay if you are in the system, and that's why they don't want new entrants. On the other hand, Michael Andretti has come out and said if Penske does not want to invest more money in the series, then he should sell it. Well, this is a very, very heavy statement because once upon a time, his driver Brad Keselowski wanted to buy a piece of Penske Racing, and net result was he was no longer with the team. So I don't think Roger Penske want any, you know, like the Greeks want no freaks. I don't think Mr. Penske want any freaks, and he is so successful, he can basically dictate the terms. But we don't want another split in IndyCar racing or any series for that matter. The race was won by Roger Penske's team, driver Joseph Newgarden.
Hi, I'm Joseph Newgarden, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
Second from south of the border was Pat O'Ward from McLaren team. Third was from far away, high-flying Kiwi Scott McLaughlin, who also drives for Roger Penske, and Roger brought him over from Australian Supercar Championship. Now, I'm very happy to report in the feeder series there are some very talented young Americans David Bowie would be proud of. We have Nolan Siegel from Portola Valley in Northern California, not far from the Palatial Studios.
Hi, I'm Nolan Siegel, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
He won the Indy Next race with authority from downtown St. Petersburg. From the Sunshine State, we have young Nikita Johnson. He won the second race of the USF Pro 2000 series. Nikita lives about half an hour away from my spider hole in Tampa. And this kid, we interviewed him recently. He's very, very young and very talented. And I think this is United States' best hope for a valid, competitive, and very good Formula One driver. He just has to keep doing what he has been doing for the last few seasons. So we wish him all the best. Okay, the opening round of the season was won by Lockie Hughes from Gold Coast, Australia.
Hi, I'm Lockie Hughes. You're listening to F1 Weekly.
This kid is also very talented, and we have interviewed him also in the recent past. But wait, there's more. From Miami, FLA, hitchhiking across the state to win both races in St. Pete in the USF Formula 2000 series is another teenager, Max Garcia. He was very quick in karting, and he's showing some serious pace in single-seaters also. His papito is the owner of Miami Homestead Speedway. In other words, Lawrence Stroll Light. Less filling, but still great taste of spending money. MotoGP, Ducati destroys competition. The Italian company from Bologna took 6 of the top 7 positions in the season opener at Lusail Circuit in Qatar. race was won by Italian Francesco Pecco Bagnaia, and Ducati has really displaced Honda and Yamaha from the podium last two seasons. The KTM, which is an Austrian brand of South African Brad Binder, was the only non-Ducati in the top seven, and he was second. Third man on the podium was Jorge Martin from Viva España. Mark Marquez, who has also left Honda for a Ducati, private entry Ducati, was fourth. Now, sir, this is very interesting. Thieves in the Temple. A Ferrari Testarossa sports car, which was stolen from Gerhard Berger during the 1995 San Marino Grand Prix, has been recovered by London police 29 years later. And the, according to the police, Metropolitan Police, the red F512M, worth about $445,000, was tracked down in 4 days after Ferrari reported it was the one being sold through a British broker to a US buyer. Now, inquiries revealed that the car was shipped to Japan shortly after being stolen from the Italian city of Imola and then arrived in Britain in late 2023. So, are you glad, sir, that I don't know if they will give the car back to Gerhard Berger or it will go someplace. Any thoughts on this?
Well, it's very interesting, but after 29 years, unfortunately, the insurance has paid for the car, so the car is owned by said insurance company.
Liberty, Liberty, or Allstate?
Over here, it's
Liberty, 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 Liberty.
There you go. Okay, sir, good news for Formula One, Audi in. Audi has now completed the next stage of the transaction on its way to acquiring Sauber team. Details have not been given, but looks like by 2026, they will have total control of the team, 100%. And this information is coming through a German-speaking website, motorsport-total.com. Andreas Seidel, who used to be at McLaren, is now the team manager there. And the gentleman who's selling the stake, his name is Finn Rousing, and he is from a family that basically started a company called Tetra Pak. This is the technology to keep milk and liquids in paper cartons fresh. So, and this gentleman is worth around about $10 billion, and that's US dollars, not Azerbaijan dollars. And he is also helping this Swedish driver in American racing, Marcus Ericsson. So that's very good. And some serious news here, and I hope this thing, you know, works out very well. Kovi and Corazon, 42-year-old Heikki Kovalainen, will be going through an open-heart surgery soon. And we would like to wish him all the best and speedy recovery. Kovi's racing achievements include winning the World Series by Renault Championship, which was a very important championship back in the day, almost like GP2. And speaking of GP2, he was the winner of the very first GP2 race in 2005 at Imola. And then he was welcomed to the world of winning by Ron Dennis at the 2008 Hungarian Grand Prix. And I think this is where Felipe Massa lost his world championship. I hope he gets his $70 million and like he's trying to slew anybody and everybody. So we'll see how that happens. Okay, sir, now we come to famous last words. Today they come from Oliver Behrman. He said, and I quote, "I honestly didn't have time to get nervous. I didn't have time to think about the gravity of the situation. Maybe that was a good thing," end quote. I am bullish on Behrman and expect more good and fast things from him. But I note with interest he had a far more impressive Formula One debut at a short notice than the other much-hyped Toto's new star of the future, Kimi Antonelli, from his two weekends in Formula Two. But we have a long way to go in the life and time of these young chargers, and we wish everybody all the speed and success. With that, we come to Musical Mondial. Let's enjoy some English cup of tea and green sleeves. Thank you for listening. Ta-ta till next time from Land Down Under.
Good night, everybody.
Yeah, the car was working really well. Of course, that last stint was a bit longer than we initially would have liked, but with the safety car, you had to pit. And from there, it was just about managing the tires to the end to make sure that the tires would last. But I do have to say that the last few laps when I was catching the back markers, my tires were starting to be a bit cold and it was quite tricky, like with the grip It was very easy to have big moments, so I had to take my time to get through the back markers, and once I cleared them again, I could just settle in. And, you know, around here with all the walls being so close, easy to make a mistake, and of course I wanted to